have our system.
Doesn't get better than starting off with a little Cure, kind of kicking us off, kind of getting us ready. Michael and I are going to have a fantastic show today. Well, thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR. Nisha is actually coming back today from India, so she'll be, if not back on the show tomorrow, at least back on the show by Thursday, and thank goodness. Because I'm at my wit's end. No, I'm just kidding. I just can't wait to have her back safely here in the Metroplex. So, without any further ado, let's kind of get to Michael. How are you doing, Michael? What's going on?
William, I'm great. How are you? I'm doing really well.
I'm doing fine. See, we were doing wordplay at the pre-show, which we could do that through the entire show. We could have a 30-minute bit where we do nothing but wordplay and puns for 400, but we won't. We won't bore people with that.
My vocabulary is not that large. I have a few words, and I know enough foul language in other languages to try and get by, but that's all I can basically do.
Well, then we'd do fine then. Scrabble between us would be three- and four-letter words. That's okay. So let's start off with the basics. Let's do the introductions. Why don't you do us a favor, do the audience a favor, introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name, as William mentioned, Michael Heller. I've been around in the HR space for the better part of 20 years now, started as a recruiter in a recruiting agency, and moved into various levels of recruitment roles as well as HR roles. Currently, I live in Washington, D.C. I am the founder of two organizations. Both have attained low level to moderate success, closer to the low level end. One company called Pillar One Consulting, where we do HR and talent management consulting for an array of growth oriented firms. And the other is Engagement Software, which is our flagship product is iReview. We've produced a way for managers to talk to their employees about performance in real time while capturing it so that those managers don't have to spend so much time, doing their annual assessments at the end of the year. And what else do you need to know? I guess I grew up in New Jersey, went to school in New England, so I'm sort of a no BS. Might be a family show, I could say BS on here.
Oh, yeah. The FCC has not clamped down on podcasts, thank God. We're good.
Okay, so no BS kind of guy. I sort of call it as it comes, which means that sometimes maybe I'll get a bit abrasive and people don't like what they hear, but at least they know where they stand with me.
Nice. Well, I always appreciate that. I'd much rather know where I stood with a person. So let's deal with. And by the way, Tim Sakic just emailed me yesterday about performance management players. I sent him back a list of folks just off the cuff. But you might want to reach out to him because I think he's profiling different technology firms for his blog. And he'll be on the show tomorrow. But basically, he just asked me because he fell in love with. As I did as well. He fell in love with Sonar 6 years ago before they, but as they ramped up and before they sold to Cornerstone, and he was asking who's kind of fallen into how they were really awesome before the acquisition. So we might want to connect those dots because he was just asking yesterday about it. Let's start with the consulting business because when you consult as an HR consultant, you're actually a practitioner at that point. You throw yourself into the gig and you represent the company's interest, et cetera. What's top of mind over there on the consulting side when you sit and work a desk for somebody? What keeps you up at night over there when you do that role?
So, you know, it's funny. It depends client to client. And having been in HR for what feels like eons, having getting the shit knocked out of me by lots of different organizations and hiring managers and people looking not to get sued, you know, I think it depends from organization to organization. I think if I take the smaller companies that are some of my clients, one of the things that they really try to focus on is how do I block and tackle as a CEO, how do I block and tackle and make sure that all of my employees' needs are met so that they can perform and produce the way that I want them to. So one of those things is taking each hurdle as it comes. You know, right now, I'm dealing with an organization that is 100% in the first quarter. And regardless of the size of any organization, 200% is a really tough nut to crack. So what they're trying to do is figure out how do I make sure that we onboard and get folks in the door have the same, you know, with the same exposure and same experience. And I think that's going to be a real interesting challenge that we're going to be faced with in this first quarter. When I move to larger organizations, I think a lot of it has to do with communication. Sometimes I feel like I'm an arbitrator between one executive and another, and making sure people are on the same page. So, you know, while both of those deal with communication, they're much different levels of scope. And you know, another organization that we're working with is a $750 million organization, and they find that their head of operations, for lack of a better term, can't play nice in the sandbox with their head of IT, and they have to work very closely together. So I'm trying to put the processes and tools and systems in place to get them working together succinctly.
So the concept of diplomacy is kind of what we're talking about here, is that HR plays this role in some ways of just kind of making sure that the left hand can coordinate with the right hand. How do we learn that? Like, how do we as professionals, how do we get good at that?
That's a really hard question. You know, because I think everybody who's listening will recall I said that I'm no bullshit. And sometimes that could get in trouble when I put my diplomacy hat on, because people aren't going to necessarily like the real story. They're going to want to hear what they want to hear and then take pieces away from it that they want. But what I've found is very helpful to me, honestly, bullet point to take away, have a great mentor. Go out and find someone that you know that you've relied on for advice in the past. Whether they're in your industry or not, lean on them to say, how did you get so good at listening? How did you get so good at providing feedback to someone that's detailed and cuts to the point, but is also, you know, something that their audience wants to hear? I think having a good mentor and somebody to help guide you in that regard is really, really important, William.
So I noticed that you didn't say SHRM or academic institutions like
those are
getting
good
your
too.
master's. Yeah, those are good too.
Those are good too. I think that what you there are lots of white papers written on SHRM, and by the way, I'm a member of SHRM myself. Lots of white papers written. I think that there's ways to you know, glean some of that from the org design methodology. But really, as I've tried to take that academic knowledge and put it to action, I've found that I've learned best, and people have different modalities they learn better by. I've personally learned best by seeing someone else do it and saying, hey, that was pretty slick. I want to become a good, how do I do it? And it takes time. It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Yeah, but you're right. What's great about it is mentors can help you as a sounding board for when you're thrown into those situations. I have Sally and Dave, and this is the, you know, where a mentor can kind of be that person that's outside of the firm, can kind of coach you through, those scenarios. Let me ask a quick question around big data, because you're sitting at the desk working for a lot of different people, and because of a consultant, you can move from company to company, so you can even have different experiences with this. Is a lot of what we're hearing out of big data just hype and buzzword bingo, or are you really getting the pressure internally as you work on the consulting side? Do you feel it? Yeah, or did you feel it in 14, and do you think you'll feel it in 15?
So it's funny that I always looked at big data as something to help guide folks, but not necessarily put into exact practice. What big data does, and what consulting firms like what I do, is take all the information and experiences they've had and take it, push it all together. Somebody still has to analyze that and come up with their own conclusions from it, and then put it into practice. And I think big data, again, this is going to sound like a safe answer, I think big data guides that. However, big data works really well in a vacuum, just because trends from a big picture perspective say that, for example, this is the right way to onboard someone. Putting that into practice in anyone's specific environment is going to require some tweaking, some institutional knowledge of the culture and the environment there, and then actually trying something out, seeing what works, setting people, communicating with people on how something like that would work, and then tweaking it as things go along. So I actually, if you, this can sound like a pitch, but if you go to my website, one of the things I don't talk about are best practices. I talk about next practices. I want to figure out what has worked in the past before, step back from it, understand one of my clients' environments implicitly, and then say, okay, based on what you're saying, this is what I've learned in my experience, and this is what my research has told me. This is what I believe will work here, with the caveat that it may not.
So we're sitting at the table, and there's operations, marketing, finance, and sales, and everybody's sitting at the table. What do you think those executives really want out of HR? At the end of the day, singularly, what do they want out of HR?
First of all, am I at that table? Holy crap.
It's your table. How about that?
I've been told time and time again, HR needs to have a seat at the table. And it's funny.
It's your table.
Yeah. So that's great. And my point is that earn that seat and get there. And having been there before, what is everybody looking to HR for, is your question. What I would hope is that singularly, everyone there wants to say, how can we drive our people, and I hate using the term human capital, but that's really what it is. How can we drive our people or our talent to achieve what our strategic goals are? But by the way, should those people or some representative of those people be instrumental in defining what those goals are over the course of the year? And a lot of companies do things a little bit differently, but I think that there should be some people element to how do we drive our folks to achieve those goals to some level of stakeholder, whether it's stockholders or myself because I'm an employee owner of an organization. I think that's what everyone is really looking for. Finance wants to do it for the least amount of money. Operations wants to do it the most efficiently. HR, as another cost center, wants to make sure that people are achieving those goals cost effectively and efficiently, but making sure that everybody's sort of rowing in the same direction. I mean, remember those Viking ships of old? If there was one guy, and this is a little bit of an extreme example, if there was one guy that was not in sync with everybody else, well, he got the whip. And we don't do that anymore in most organizations, but if everybody rows in the same direction and there's somebody at the front of the ship that's saying, faster, slower, turn, that sort of thing, that's when the ship gets from point A to point B in the most efficient manner.
Okay. So let's pivot to the other side of your world, you're a psychotic. So the other side of your brain, let's go to the other personalities that you might have. And let's deal with the feedback, performance review side of your business. It's lazy content. It's very easy to say performance reviews suck. Like, I think that pretty much the last 20 years, anybody that's anyone can say that comment, and people are like, yep, they suck. But let's get past that for a moment. Like, what's really, you built a product around this, so you were so frustrated that you actually went and built a software product around this. What's really, take us into the wonderful world that is feedback and performance, and kind of bring us up to speed.
Sure. Well, can I back up and talk about why I got so frustrated that I needed to create this, or do you want to talk about the product itself?
No. Tell me why led you to the break.
Okay. So I, believe it or not, I ran into from several personalities that performance reviews suck. So you're right. It's easy to say that, but what I tried to understand was why they sucked. You know, as an employee receiving an annual performance assessment, the information was dated. And sometimes my manager was very good about providing feedback on a regular basis, and sometimes they weren't. And they used the annual assessment as a way to talk to me. Manager, I worked for a firm at one point in time where we did third-party assessments of folks that didn't report to us. We had to have people reporting to us in order to do annual assessment, but we had to do them for people in other areas. So we went through a fact-finding mission, and that fact-finding mission was gather up all this information, 10 or 12 people who touched this person, and coordinate trends, and then take those trends and put them into a really sufficient annual assessment. And personally, I thought that this was a little bit inefficient because I was going and getting information from people who touched this person, where I didn't have any insight into. So it took a long time, and I wanted to do it right. This was this person's career, and potentially their, raise, their promotion, their bonus, things like that. So I was frustrated that it took probably in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 hours per person. Writing 7 of those took a half a week's worth of time, at a minimum. As an organization, in meeting with C-level executives, I found that folks wanted to make sure, it goes back to an earlier statement, that people were aligned with the goals of the organization. And not always did the annual assessment look at that from a forward-looking basis. It always looked at it from a backward-looking basis. So in other words, this is what you did all of last year. And you didn't achieve, you weren't successful in achieving these goals. You were very successful in achieving these goals for last year's goals. Now, next year, we'll talk about how you did against this year's goals. But it didn't really combine, and executives were left scratching their heads and saying, well, how can we do this where it's more forward-looking? And I began thinking about this several years ago, and that's when I came up with the originations of iReview. And iReview is a tool that allows managers and others to provide what I'm calling bursts of microfeedback to employees in real time. And it's then allowing the employees to act on it and do what they're doing well and keep doing what they're doing well and stop doing or pivot and change to what they're not doing well according to their manager. I'm not suggesting that this opens the door for not having real-time discussions. I'm looking at iReview as a way to enhance those real-time discussions. At the same time, capturing these bursts of microfeedback and aggregating them and storing them in the cloud so that it can automatically populate annual assessments, making it easier for managers to write and remember everything that happens over the course of the year.
Where do you see feedback going? If this is now, and you painted the picture of the last couple of years and what was the breaking point to get you to a place of actually fixing the problem, which, thank you, you're either one of the part of the solution or part of the problem. So at least you're a part of the solution. Where do you see this kind of going in the next couple of years?
Well, interestingly enough, I'd like to evangelize and maybe help people get to the point that annual assessments become that forward-looking tool. And they don't go away, but they become a, hey, all of this information that you've gotten over the course of the year through these bursts of microfeedback, now you're not surprised by any of this information that's happening at the end of the year. In addition, because it's captured, it's basically saying you've seen this before. It's come to you. You have been able to act on it, and you've been able to perform better. I think that more and more organizations are becoming, from a generational perspective, more millennial. Right now, millennials make up about 40% of the workforce. That number is going to get larger, and they're also the largest generational cohort in the workforce. And millennials are different, as everybody will tell you, than every other generation that's in the workforce right now. They want communication very, very instantly. They're technologically savvy. They value workplace freedom. So I think that not only are we going to find that, this generation wants to have communication more frequently, and they want it quicker, and they want it in short snippets, which is what they've been accustomed to, but they're also going to want to maybe work more remotely or telework, or I think that's called twerking, right, when you telework? Am I using that correctly?
You are, indeed.
Excellent. So, and then in addition to all of those things, you're going to find that millennials have a lot less corporate loyalty than other generations in the workplace. So when told, hey, we give feedback and we do annual assessments, we do it once a year, millennials will say, well, that's not the way I want it. In a nice way, managers may say, well, then you can pursue excellence elsewhere. The challenge is somebody from my generation would put their head down and get back to work because, oh, my gosh, I don't want to lose my job. Millennials will say, okay, I'm going to go and do that. Now, here's the challenge. Somebody at that experience level and that price point is going to be replaced with another millennial with similar mindsets.
Right.
What I reviewed, I think, will help out with is providing feedback to a geographically dispersed workforce more efficiently and be able to capture it and aggregate it more efficiently than and by the way, more securely than, say, email or Twitter or things like that.
Yeah, it seems like, one of the things I really like about this approach is you're trying to meet people where they are. That's kind of the fail is for years, performance management has been thought of as cookie cutter. What applies to, and break it out by all kinds of different things. Like we just deal with generations, but you could break it out by the different types of players, gender, role, geographical location. Like you can cut this any number of ways, but at the end of the day, at the heart of it is, what are you doing it for? Are you doing it to make the employee better? Or are you doing it to make the company better? And the easy answer, and I think it's lazy, is to say both, because I call bullshit on that. I don't think that you're actually doing performance management to make both better. And I think that's the real struggle is how do you get out of the cookie cutter and say, we're just going to meet you where you want. Let's say that performance management in a perfect world is about the employees. It has very little to do with corporate interest. And let's just say it's actually a training and development mechanism, and it's for the employee benefit. Okay, if we could agree on that, which getting 10 people to agree on that would be, insane, but let's just say we agreed on that. Then it's a game of letting them decide. I want this daily, and I want it in the form of just positive. Don't tell me anything I've done critical. I'm already so critical of myself. Anyhow, I don't need critical. I need you to just give me affirmation. Tell me where I've done well. And I want it daily. And I want it via text. Like letting them personalize the experience all the way to the point where it's theirs. And I think it's instead of that struggle of it being a corporate interest versus employee interest, you just side with one or the other. And I think corporations, if they wanted to, could say, no, actually, it's not about employees at all. It's about corporate interest. The reason we do performance reviews is for the company to get better. You're part of that, but here's where we're going to help you get better so that the company get better. And if you don't get better, well, then you leave.
Well,
and thusly we
so,
get better. Anyhow,
so,
go ahead.
So one of the things I sometimes talk about in the consulting world is I occasionally will do selfish things for very unselfish reasons or do unselfish things for selfish reasons. Let me explain what I mean. So let's say we turn around and say, you know what, giving more feedback to employees and getting them feedback about performance more frequently is all about the employees. You know, let's get it so that they can get better. Well, that's an unselfish thing to do, but it has a selfish result for the business perspective, William. So what happens then is, because we're doing that unselfish act and we're getting the employees better, we're actually creating a culture of more loyalty and more engagement. And therefore, will an employee stay incrementally longer, and the organization can then reduce their turnover cost because of that? Yet to be seen, but that's a potentially selfish result from an unselfish act.
Right. So how do you see the product going right now? So, and it's okay to talk about it. How do you see it as it is now, and what do you think 15 holds for, you know, the product side of your business?
I love that question, because right now we've gained a handful of clients in 2014, and we launched basically in the middle of 2014. And there are some things that our clients are already asking for, and we've already started to work on V2.0. I think that there's an analytics component that we're going to be pulling into this software that's going to help define a culture and also help define, you know, areas of improvement for an organization. So it's not just about the employee, but it gets a little bit bigger than that. You know, I think that one of the things I would love to see iReview do, I'd love to have the data on clients who have used it for a period of time to say X number of people are using iReview on a daily basis to provide their employees with feedback. And right now, one of our clients, 75% of their employees are using iReview on a daily basis. You know, that might be an anomaly. But the other thing that we've incorporated into the software is reminders, so that if you're not providing feedback to an employee, managers can get pinged. Hey, by the way, you haven't shown Joe McGillicuddy the love today. Why don't you send him a quick iReview and let him know how he's doing? You know, the other thing that iReview can do is, when you finish the project, an employee can proactively send a note out to their manager or somebody. Hey, I just finished the deliverable. How about a little bit of feedback? Let me know how it went, or what could I do better on the next project? So what I want to do is make it even easier to use than it is already, and really, really adoptable, so people can provide feedback to their employees more frequently.
I love it. I love it, I love it, I love it. We got about a minute left. This flew by even faster than I expected. What's I love the fact, so Michael, one of the things I really love is I love the fact that you've got your hands still down in the dirt doing great practitioner work, while at the same time you're trying to change the software game. And all too often you have people in the software business that don't really understand HR. And so I really love that. And I know at one point, if both businesses continue to grow and grow and grow, and you're going to have to, you know, unless you clone yourself, you'll have to kind of figure that out. But I just love the fact, you know, that your hands are down in the dirt still doing the practitioner work. How do people keep up with you? What's the best way to kind of keep up with your comings and goings?
So we do have a couple of Twitter accounts. One is my own personal one, Michael_Heller. The other is iReview_Engagiant, Engagiant. And then, you know, I'm happy to give out my email address and my phone number so people can contact me directly. You know, we do blog postings and Twitter postings very frequently. Please contact me if you have something you'd like to talk about or if there's information that I can provide. It's mheller@engagient, engagient.com. And you can also reach me at 301-367-2852.
Awesome. My friend, we are out of time, and I appreciate you being on the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR on this lovely of Tuesdays. And we're going to roll out to a little happy. Thanks, Michael. Have a great day.
My pleasure.
Crazy what I'm about to say.